This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. With your hosts, Tama Fulton and John Hudson Masserol. Are you ready to discover your True North Story?
It's always better when you're in the studio.
Of course. So glad to be here.
Why? We're glad to have you there, sir.
Yeah, well, after that landing last
night.
What you didn't know is that we can go forever if we want to. We can live inside of a moment, the one that we own. You and me, we got this. You and me, we're beautiful, beautiful. We are gonna be all right.
Is this Ms. Tamara McCleary?
No. This is a Chinese place. You want an order, right?
Yes. 3 number 2s and 2 number 4s and 1 number 7.
Don't forget the egg rolls.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. You have such a diverse and amazing life. You know, I mean, you have goats and chickens in Colorado on your farm, and you fly to New York to accept distinguished awards, and then you go to Cleveland to hang out with rockers. I mean, how great is that?
Oh, well, you know, life is short, so we better just make the most of it, right?
Absolutely. Then that's what we talk about on our True North Story podcast.
So cool. And I'm glad you guys are doing well. Podcast is going great, and you guys are moving and shaking.
Yeah. I mean, we appreciate that. And we've been really blessed with the people who have been willing to share their True North stories with us. And I think we've really stepped into a space here that people are interacting with and engaging with and finding helpful and interesting. And so we are so glad to have you share your story as another voice in our eclectic roster of guests.
Fantastic. Well, I'm honored.
We feel honored and blessed. We chatted just a bit about what True North Story is, finding your purpose and your passion in life. And sometimes we start out thinking that it's one thing, and then we find out maybe we needed to find another trajectory. And a lot of it is about reinvention, as you talk about personal branding and all that, kind of have to figure out the steps along the way to find that true north. And so for you, Tamara, I know that you started out in the healthcare industry and had a really, really impactful and I think probably somewhat emotionally exhausting job. Can you talk a little bit about how life started for you and then maybe at what point you decided to make a transition?
I started off my early days right out of college as a registered nurse. The reason I went into nursing was I've always felt this pang to take care of the suffering. That's always bothered me, even, you know, since I can remember. Seeing someone homeless on the street has always bothered me. So I thought nursing would be a great career move to be of service. And at the same time, I have this other side of me that's so practical, which is, what can I go to school for in 4 years, get out and begin making good money? Mm-hmm. Because I had dreams of going to graduate school. I knew I was going to have to pay that bill, as I did college as well. So I needed to be really careful with how I spent my 4 years. So nursing seemed like a natural fit because you make decent money in 4 years and you also get to be of service. I love healthcare. I love wellness. I love making things better. I love fixing things. I wanted to go back into graduate school. I wanted to study cancer and the cures for cancer, and that is molecular physiology. And so I went back to school to be a molecular physiologist, but I needed to be able to switch my night shift schedule. So I took a job that was going to be days, and I thought it was a great opportunity for finally working the day shift because I'd always been on the night shift. It was actually a job as a hospice case manager, which I thought was going to be really, really, really cool in the fact that being there for people when they need it most, that's when I feel most vibrant and alive, right? I'm one of those friends, Tama, that when things are going good for you, I'm pretty much not that much used to you. But when things are really rough, like I'm that person that loves to be there when things are going really
I can relate.
Rough.
And I can completely relate to that. Absolutely.
So I'm not the party friend. I'm the friend that wants to be there when you've fallen and when things are really tough. And so hospice to me was attractive in the fact that that's when people want to depart, but I want to stay. But I really had no idea how incredibly different it was going to be than even I had envisioned, right? Just like you had said to your point earlier, which is we sometimes have these grandiose plans in our mind of what something's going to be like. And then the truth is it turns out to be not at all what we expected. In fact, here I was going in thinking that I was going to be of help and of service, but I had no idea that in the end, all of these people that I was going to be caring for as they were dying were going to actually help me. They were actually going to minister to me. Not that I was broken, but there were things that needed fixing, mm-hmm. that they would fix those pieces. So really, they were in service to me. And you can't see those things ahead of time. Working with people who were on their way out was an extraordinary experience that shifted my entire life course. When you talk about a true North story, I'll tell you that shifted my entire course because I saw so clearly beyond the superficial trap. We forget who we are, right? We forget what this is all about, and we get caught up in our work and our roles and paying our bills and what kind of car we drive, what kind of house we live in, what kind of partner we have. Are we single? Are we partnered? We think of all these things, but when someone's dying, all of those things don't matter anymore. What really matters, how did you spend your time while you were here? What did you experience? Who did you give to? Who did you love? What did you experience? You're on your way out. And that shook me up. It really, really shook me up to begin to think about, gosh, have I even actually been here? Because I did this deep analysis. I dove deep into my own soul and realized usually I was always existing in a past moment, like rehashing a conversation or reliving a memory or thinking about something that happened in the past. Or I time traveled to the future and I was living into a what if, or what if I did this and what if I did that. And so I was bouncing back and forth between realities that aren't even here, right? So the past doesn't exist anymore and the future doesn't exist. But was I actually here? Was I here in this present moment? And did I actually pay attention? And I realized I was not at all aware. Usually I was someplace else. And so even though my body was present with a patient or a family member or a friend or a loved one, even if my body was present, what I realized was that I was not. And that was earth-shattering for me because then I couldn't recall that I'd actually ever lived. That's what shifted everything for me at that time. And that was back in 1989. So I'm in my early 20s, the very beginning of that time in my life when most people are thinking about other things. I started thinking about, I haven't been alive. I've been dead for 20-something years. How am I going to wake up? And that, to me, was that first massive wake-up call. And then, you know, it was interesting because after that wake-up call, it was kind of like, you know, I talk a lot about the hero's journey and how, you know, it works in business. I work with individuals and businesses around this whole hero's journey because it's phenomenal. It works in everything. And in the hero's journey, your hero is kind of in the ordinary world, daily existence, doing what they do, get up in the morning, go to work, take care of the family, whatever it is they do. And then all of a sudden something happens in their life, this defining moment that wakes them up, shakes them up, and it's kind of like this call to adventure. And with this call to adventure is you're going to have to jump off into the abyss because if you change, and we all know this happens, when you change, then all kinds of things change around us. And people don't like necessarily our changes because they really are used to the ordinary. And so when we get this call to adventure, a lot of times what happens is we chicken out. Or my favorite way of chickening out, if we're going to be totally honest here, because you know that's the way I got to play it, is transparent.
Yes.
If the way I like to chicken out is to procrastinate. That's how I do it. So when I'm afraid, I just never really quite do it. I talk about doing something, but I don't actually do it. And, you know, we all can relate to procrastination, right?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
And it's a really clever way of actually not having to do what it is that scares you. I procrastinated. I knew that I wanted to live my life differently, but I was so terrified as to what does that mean? And how is it going to change what I do? And I have this map for my life, you know, like we do in our 20s, right? We have this whole map of how it's going to be. And that would mean that my map was going to be shredded. And then it also meant I knew somewhere deep inside. right. I just knew it meant that I was going to change. And then what did that mean? And so I kind of went into this refusal phase of like, yeah, you know, when I get around to it, or this is kind of cool, but, you know, not right now. As happens in the journey for most of us, it pairs well with the hero's journey, is that something comes to help us. When something's brought into your awareness, and then all of a sudden, all these people or things come along your path that keep pointing the way, and they keep reminding you, or they, you know, that silent tap on the shoulder, and there's help there. And to me, that's divine intervention. That's spirit saying, no, you can, you're not alone. And one of the biggest lessons I learned way back then is that we have to do this by ourselves. We have to follow our true North story. We have to follow our passion ourselves. That's up to us to do. That's our decision. That's called free will. However, we don't have to do it alone. And to me, where the soul and the spirit people come in. And for me, it's my spiritual practice comes in to continue to uplift and nourish me along the way so that I'm not alone. I have to do it by myself, right? In the fact that I have to make that decision on my own. But I'm not alone once I step out there, once I make that first move. And there is support out there. Crossing that threshold for me was realizing that this program I was in for molecular physiology was not the right program for me. Being behind a microscope is not where I belong. And then having that uncomfortable period of not really sure what it is that I should do. And I don't know if you relate to this, but you get into these places where you know what you shouldn't be doing, or we don't even have to use the word should. I'm not that into that word, but you know what I'm talking about. When you know that what you're currently up to isn't really resonating with what your passion is,
right?
But yet you know that that's not it, but yet you really don't know what is it.
For sure.
So when you don't know what is it, you're like, okay, I'm lost, and you begin to flounder a bit. And I think that's where a lot of people find themselves dropping off.
And don't you think, Tamara, too, that a lot of people let life live them as opposed to the other way around? Because to your point, it's far more scary to go out and adventure in your own behalf based on your own passions and not really know necessarily how it may or may not turn out. And to your point earlier about other people chiming in, and their intentions aren't always necessarily good either. They could be like, well, why are you doing that? Well, I mean, all these bad things can happen if you do that. You know, you may end up in bankruptcy, or you may do this, or you may. And of course, there are encouraging voices along the way too, but you have to be aware enough, which you said earlier, to be able to ascertain the difference between those two voices, right?
It's using discernment. For me, my highest guidance, my highest wisdom is never contained in another human being. Because when I look at human beings, we are so deliciously flawed. But we have all of these layers of all kinds of perceptions of what we think is right or not right, and opinions based upon perceptions that are inherently flawed because they're human. So for me, I use a great discernment to share anything with a human being. First of all, I'm an introvert and I'm an internal processor. I don't process externally. By the time it comes out, I've already worked it through. It's a place of meditation and on my knees and prayer and really asking for guidance from the Holy Spirit for me to give me that guidance, because I don't believe that we should ever be looking out there to govern in here. All of the truth that we seek, all of the where's my true north story, all of that is not out there. It's in here. And, you know, once we wake up and we have eyes to see beyond the superficial,
right,
the superficial trappings of this world, all of us are constantly, we don't mean to be, but we're constantly judging other people and ourselves.
Sure. Sure,
so
absolutely.
We judge others and ourselves, and we judge on all kinds of crazy things. I mean, all of us today, we could just even do as a little practice, try to catch yourself making a judgment. And I swear, you'll be exhausted by how many you end up making. And we judge people immediately on their appearance, on how much money they have, their status, their role, their title at work, their car, their house. I mean, we don't mean to, but we make these snap judgments. We make judgments based on people's skin color, by their hair, is it long or short? Are they skinny? Are they heavy? we make judgments about how much somebody might eat based on what they look like. And you know, all that's not true, but we can't help ourselves because we are, like I said, deliciously flawed. But I think that once we realize that we do have these flaws, and it's okay because we all have them, but I think one of the things that we do that is distracting from us from our true North story, or not showing us what our passion is, when we put these masks on and we pretend to be something because that's what we want to be, and we're afraid that we're not, and so then we're not being completely transparent and honest and real with others, but mostly with ourselves.
Right.
So, because I think most people struggle with a lack of forgiveness towards themselves. I think if you're going to look for passion, if you're going to look for what your purpose is, first and foremost, you have to find redemption, and redemption is found in forgiveness. And forgiveness, I think, stems from remembering who it is that we are. And we are not who we think we are. We're not our title. We're not our car. We're not our role in life. We're not our status. We're not how much money is in our bank account. We're not mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers. We're none of those things that we label. We are, I believe, spiritual beings having a very human experience. And so this human experience means that we're going to fail ourselves. We're going to fail other people. Other people are going to fail us. To expect that a level of perfection from ourselves and others on this planet is setting ourselves up for misery and serial disappointment. When we can remember who it is that we really are, and we can rise above all of these things in our everyday, we can begin to cultivate, I believe, a beautiful experience. We cultivate an awareness of the sacred in the mundane of our everyday, a sacredness in washing the dishes and cleaning up the kitchen for the billionth time after you have kids in the house. Let me tell you, that's all you ever do. Cultivating that sacred in the mundane of the things you do, doing the laundry, going and filling the car up with gas, all the thousand things that we do that seem to be bothersome or get in the way. When you look at the experiences of people who have been diagnosed with a terminal illness or are going through the process of being faced with their own mortality, all of those things for them don't impinge on them. In fact, they seem to create a space of gratitude for being alive to even wash a dish, or being alive to be able to have the experience of being in their car and going to get gas. And so I think that little tiny shift in our perception of all the billion things we do that are maybe not exciting, but are a part of just being a human being and living, are to me what awakened me to the mystery, the miracle of life. We are living a miracle every day. Every day we take a breath, we're here. We're here, and that's cause for celebration. And when you begin to dive into that mystery and that miracle of beingness, of being alive, you begin to feel so grateful for all the billion little things in your life you forgot about. Like when you flick the light switch on in a room and the light comes on, man, that is cause for celebration. How lucky, how spoiled are we that we have electricity and we have light at the flick of a switch. And then when we turn on our faucet, we are so spoiled here. We have water we could actually drink out of the faucet. And that's cause for celebration. And so when you think about all the million things in just an hour that are incredible things, like the clouds in the sky and the sun coming through your window. And, you know, these are things that when you really think about them can shift you from a life path of chaos and confusion and instead root yourself back on the path of finding your true North story, of remembering who you are and why you're here and what you have come to contribute, what you specifically are giving by your presence, that you came and you're living, and all the million things you do in a day to make someone's experience here better. You know, I just think that I get so crazy when I think about how incredibly blessed we are. And it just makes my chest want to explode from the gratitude I feel in my heart. But everything that is showing up in our experience this day, right now, is the sum total of all of our thoughts up until this point. When I think, and what I think causes me to feel, and what I feel causes me to have an experience. And so I would say to any listener that if you're not having the experience that you want to have right now, if you do feel lost sometimes, not all the time, but just that, you know, sometimes the worst feeling of loss is that nagging that you're not on the path that you know, you just have this inkling inside that you should be on. And the best way to remedy that is to take a deep breath and begin to analyze, how are you thinking? And usually you will find the problem is how we're thinking about our lives, that we're missing out on the miracle, we're missing out on the mystery, and we're not cultivating the sacred in the mundane, and we're not connecting back to spirit. We're forgetting who it is that we are, and we're forgetting who everyone else is as well. And I think as soon as you identify that, you can begin to experience a shift in your mood and your feelings and your thoughts and your experience of this day immediately. It takes no time at all to feel that, and it's through cultivating that deep gratitude for the mystery and the miracle of being here. And if you're listening to this podcast right now, you are alive. That is something to celebrate. You are a gift to the world. We are so glad you came.
Yes, welcome to life. And it propels you into realizing that you're here for a reason, and you're in this moment because there's a reason for you to be here. And so it does make you start thinking about how you can contribute, because you're just grateful to be here in this moment. I love that.
Yeah. And you know, you matter, and everyone is making a contribution. And I think sometimes, because life can feel hard, and I won't sugarcoat it, you know, I've had my share of insane challenges, but
you're not alone.
I'm speaking from experiences, like insane challenges. And All I can say is that having walked quite a rocky road and a winding path myself, that even challenges contain divine perfection. And we are here to learn, we are here to grow, and we are here to love. And I believe the most wounded of us become the greatest lovers of people. And the most scarred of us become the most aware and the most in service. And I always think of the wounded healer. So If you've gone through struggles, you are perfectly poised to reach a hand out and help others. Because if someone has lived a charmed life without challenges and without stumbling blocks, then how are they going to be able to relate to and serve someone else who's having a really rough time? It's the same thing when we have done things wrong. We've made poor choices. We are living through consequences, maybe for decisions that we probably know we would have been better off not making. And we may have let people down in the past. Parenting is a great lesson in how you are completely imperfect, because you're going to let people down. You'll let your partner down. You'll let your kids down. And not on purpose, but it's because we are human beings. And again, I say it is about coming back to that level of forgiveness and realizing that we're here to learn, that every challenge is a divine perfection, because we're growing and we're learning and we're being bigger, better lovers, a bigger heart to be a healing presence in the world.
This is True North Story, the original podcast series. Learn, love, listen, live. And now, back to the program.
One of the recurring themes Tam and I talk about that we've experienced with other guests on True North Story is that comeback being a catalyst, if you want to call it that, for a turnaround or a moment of awareness, you know, where they start to realize that there's something more and that they need to be aware of it, or they need to lean into that awareness and learn more from it. And the catalyst is the common point that ties all that together, is that there's something that happened, a tragedy or a multitude of things that led to a certain place that someone had to come back from, or an addiction to deal with, just a lot of things. And so to your point, if there are people out there now that are in it. I mean, they're in the pit. They're looking in the abyss. How do you encourage them to stay the course and know that it will get better and that this is part of a learning process that will make them ultimately a far better person?
The best thing I've ever known to be the deepest seed of wisdom of truth is that this too shall pass. And the reason this too shall pass is so profound is there's this really ancient story about Solomon's ring. And it's said that King Solomon lost his ring and he wanted to get it back. So he sent a servant out to find this ring. And he said, "You will know this ring because it's inscribed with a message that will make the rich man cry and the poor man sing." And inscribed on this ring was, "This too shall pass." Because this too shall pass, the rich man will cry, the poor man will sing, because everything in our experience is never, ever, ever staying the same. It always changes. And so if you're in the midst of deep sorrow, or you're in the midst of a deep trial or tribulation, or a challenge that seems insurmountable, what I can guarantee you is this too shall pass. And no more salient of a moment in my life was this completely highlighted for me than when I was sitting in my sister's funeral. And my sister Barbara was, actually she was murdered in a violent crime and much too young. Anyone's too young to be murdered in a violent crime. But, you know, we were a lot younger. She was 33 at the time that she was killed. Sitting in her funeral, and I'm beyond grief-stricken, right? And she's got two little kids that she's leaving behind, and it's just, it's a horrible, tragic time. In the midst of it, in the midst of this funeral, for just a minute, I had a thought, and here's the thought I had. Gosh, I'm hungry. And in my mind, I started thinking about a green chili burrito. And I caught myself as I had that pang of hunger and thinking about our burrito, and I caught myself and I was like, I cannot believe that for that second that I was thinking hungry green chili burrito, that had absolutely no torture, no grief, no nothing about my sister Barbara, because in that moment my thought was something else. And so I thought, wow, this is how powerful our thoughts are. Our thoughts are that powerful. So what I realized back then, and this is many years ago, is that, you know, this is almost 20 years ago, is what I thought back then was that if that can happen to me when I am in the midst of insane grief, I mean, I had been bawling my head off and I was just a really tough time. And if for that brief moment when I thought about a green chili burrito, I had absolutely no pain, no sorrow, no nothing, then maybe our thoughts really are that powerful. And so whenever I've gotten into a really challenging situation, and you can use this with not so challenging situations too, but I seem to have really challenging ones in my life. But what I'll do is I will start thinking about all that is good, all that is lovely, all that is right. I get into the state of gratitude. I find one thing to begin to think on that I'm grateful for, and I expand it, and I expand it farther, and I add something else and expand it farther. And as I start to think on those things, all of the feelings and the thought and the agony and the suffering that I was in before, and the anxiety, this works for anxiety attacks, by the way, beautifully, as I'm someone who struggles with anxiety. So it works for anxiety as well, and it will dissipate. It will completely go away while you are in the space of thinking about what you're grateful for. And it works. I can guarantee you that.
That's incredible and very powerful. Changing our entire focus in the middle of a crisis, you can start becoming grateful and thinking about what you do have, and it can change your entire physiological being.
Exactly. It's that powerful and it's that immediate. And you know what else is kind of cool about that, Tama, is that we are that powerful.
Wow.
We really have the power to shape the experience that we're having. And it's really tough. It's really tough to walk that when you're in the midst of struggle. But I think that that's where the gold is. In the midst of that struggle is practicing these things, because as we practice, we get better at it. And it does grow us and it does shape us and it does help us to be more of who we are and remember who it is that we are. And, you know, the other thing that I think it does is it helps to cultivate compassion for other people, because sometimes our suffering is because we feel let down or we feel that someone has wronged us. And we can apply this same principle to those experiences as well, because we can begin to see where we too fail other people, or we too let other people down. And it's not in necessarily the same way, but because we're human beings and we can remember not only who we are, but who they are, and begin to have more compassion and forgiveness. And the more we are able to forgive ourselves, the more we really can find the ability to forgive others. If anyone struggles with forgiveness, it's usually because there's a lot of unforgiveness toward themselves. And it's really hard to forgive other people if you can't forgive yourself.
That is so true.
Yesterday, I happened to be taking some shoes in to get shined.
Seriously? Like, whose shoes were they?
I don't know.
No idea?
No idea.
Really? None at all. No idea whose shoes they were. I didn't even know. I mean, who still shines shoes?
I don't know.
Me neither.
It's a very rare thing.
My boots.
Your boots. There you go.
Okay.
Yes. Well, I was taking some shoes in to get shined, and the gentleman who was shining shoes really seemed overwhelmed, I guess. And there was a line of people wanting to pick up, drop off, and
that's because he's the only one shining shoes anymore. We need more shoe shiners.
Well, and here's the point. So, gentlemen, no, it's all good. A gentleman who was ahead of me in line turned to me and he said, "Does this guy just seem overwhelmed to you?" And I said, "Yeah, you know, he does." And he said, "He doesn't seem very happy." I said, "You know, you're right." So this gentleman was the coolest guy. He sat in the chair to get his shoes shined. And as the man was shining his shoes, he just said to him, he goes, "You know, you just seem like you're maybe a little overwhelmed and having a bad day." The guy said, "I am." There was supposed to be another guy here working. It's holiday season. We're just so busy. And the guy put in for vacation and it didn't get approved, but he decided he's going on vacation anyway. So he just didn't come to work. And so here I am. And the guy said, "You know, I feel that. And I'm so sorry that that happened." He goes, "But you know what?" He goes, "A smile will do so much for you. I'm going to smile at you and I'm going to tell you that life could be worse." And the guy was like, "Yeah, the line here could be twice as long." And he goes, "No, you could be without a job."
You could have no shoes to shine.
That's right. And, you know, and the guy was just so positive to this shoeshine guy. And as soon as he left, he gave the guy a little bit bigger tip than he probably was used to. And the guy was so grateful. And he just said, "Hey, just relax and enjoy your day." And he left. Immediately, I noticed a change of the demeanor of the shoeshine man. And somebody came in and he had been telling people, 3 to 4 days before I can get your shoes shined for you. A woman came in. "I just want to drop these off." 2 days. Automatically, I went from 4 days to 2 days. I can get these shoes back to you. It was amazing. It was amazing. So to your point, when we can speak, give people grace and speak kindness into people's lives and relate to them and help them see another side to the story, if they're receptive to that, wow, it can be transformational.
Oh, I think it totally changes their disposition. It has to. It has to make them, I mean, unless they're just far gone or so angry or whatever. When people talk to you and encourage you, and it's hard to stay in that same place, you know?
Yeah.
Can I get an amen?
Yeah. If we really want to change and we really want to have a different experience, the only path is through radical acceptance of whatever's showing up. And when I mean radical acceptance, it means stop fighting with what's showing up. Stop having an attachment to the way you think it ought to be versus the way it is. Because like even your shoeshine guy was struggling within himself because he decided already that this is the way that it should happen. And instead it was happening a different way. And he was arguing with reality. And the problem with arguing with reality is it will get you nowhere.
Yeah, it's a zero-sum game, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because reality
so
is happening.
Radical acceptance.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it does change everything. I mean, I had all these ideas that when I had a child that it was going to be this magical experience and I was going to be like those moms that I saw in Starbucks, you know, the baby sleeping in the little stroller and they're sipping their coffee and it seemed like they were having such a nice life. You know, I've always been an entrepreneur, so I've always been working 7 days a week all the time. And I thought, okay, finally I have this child and I'm going to be able to sip a coffee. It's going to be great. And then nothing happened the way that it was supposed to. And I'm putting that in quotation marks in the air.
Quotes.
My pregnancy was fraught with problems. I was on bed rest for you know, 4, almost 5 months when I did have my child. It was by an emergency C-section, and I was in renal failure, and then I was in the ICU for 2 weeks, and I got something called HELLP syndrome and DIC, and only 1% of women survived that.
Whoa.
And so by the time I did get home, I was wiped out, and now I was not going to have any sleep, because if you've ever had a baby, you just don't, you know, you don't sleep. My life was turned upside down, and it didn't seem like the Starbucks mom life at all. And inside I was like, gosh, you know, when am I going to get a break? And when are, you know, things going to slow down? And it's like,
right,
seemed to get worse. And so I kept thinking to myself, it's like, all right, you know, that whole radical acceptance, because I had already learned a lot of hard lessons. My sister had already passed, and now in my 30s, because I was 35 when I had Parker, I knew that I needed to accept this. And it was a matter of, you know, your practice, you get to a point, you know what your practice is, then sometimes you choose not to do it.
Right.
Because you want to be in that negative space for a while. Sometimes you just want to take a sip from the cup of melancholy every now and then, and you want to be in your space. And then you're sad or mad or grumpy until you're not.
Tam and I always talk about this, you know, I always joke about purgatory, being in purgatory. It just, it's funny to me, because when you're in that moment and you're like, how much more can I take? Okay, how much longer do I have to stay here? Like, all of this stuff has gone south and battling, and I'm one more wave might put me under. But then we talk about, you know, God will not give you more than you can bear. So then you're like, oh, great. Well, can I bear one more wave? Well, you know, I don't know. And you feel like you're treading water in this place, and you want it to get better, which is what you're talking about. But for me personally, the biggest thing to overcoming that was to become at peace with that moment. Like, however you have to do that, through awareness and through understanding and trying to say, okay, this too shall pass that you alluded to earlier. If you can make peace with that moment, you're like, okay, if another wave comes, maybe the next wave won't come. It really changes your attitude. And then it's not so much about what is coming or what isn't coming, but it's about where you are right now, which is what you're talking about, which is learning to live in that moment and be grateful that you're alive.
So true, John. And I think sometimes the moment doesn't feel like one that you feel to be grateful for. And until you then, I think, have to kind of rise above the muck of our perception. Because some of our moments that bring us down the most are ones that we want to run from, right? We don't want to stay present in a moment. We don't want to stay present in a sorrow. We don't want to stay present when something is painful, and that's psychology, we call that splitting. We sometimes resist accepting because we're not happy with the moment. And I think what you're speaking of is being able to grab one thing, even if in that moment you can't find it, but one thing that you can be grateful for. So like for me, stopping and being grateful that I was alive. Wow, that was amazing. And it was going back to that practice that I knew about, which was finding one thing that I could be grateful for, and then expanding from there. And I've had to repeat that practice over and over and over again. And I don't know if it's because I've got slow learner.
Really, I was going to say, because you have so
really
much to learn.
What?
Yeah.
I swear to you, after 51 years walking on this planet, you'd think that things would just click normally for me. But I have to, it seems as if I repeat a lot of lessons. And I've gotten to this place in my life, and I think it happened after 50 for me. I got to this place in my life where I'm like, all right, Tamara, if you don't want to have to repeat a lesson, you need to learn it, and you need to stay focused and aware with your practice so that you don't have to keep relearning. And I think this radical acceptance, this acceptance of stopping, taking a breath, and being accepting of what is, and then if you don't like the very moment that you're in, find something to be grateful for and begin to focus on that and expand outward into other things, is incredibly transformative. I can't say enough to people out there who struggle with challenges with family members or children who have struggles and difficulties. My son actually has a diagnosis of autism, but I know that his early years, he's 16 now, but in his early years, man, I'm telling you, the screaming and the behaviors and I don't think you really understand the enormity of the behaviors that can go on. But talk about having to practice radical acceptance in the moment. That to me was like having baptism by fire. What I began to do is to really see my child as my teacher to become more loving, to make sure that I wasn't snapping or becoming frustrated or reacting, but rather that I was being very grounded and preparing for my day ahead of time before it would start so that I could respond to my child and not react to my child, and that I could radically accept each moment as it transpired, even if it didn't look very pretty, even if it was a scary moment, a moment that made me fear for what it meant. Because usually when I was in fear, I was projecting into the future. Like, oh, what does this mean? Does it mean that he won't be able to do this, or that this will be our life in the future? And so I was projecting into the future again, which is where I would catch myself time traveling and bring myself back to the present moment, accept what was showing up in that present moment, find the one thing that I was grateful for, begin to expand on that one thing that I was grateful for, and make it two, and then three, and then four, until I could shift those feelings that I had. And the anxiety would dissipate, the sorrow would dissipate, the regret would dissipate, and that ability to not forgive myself for some unseen sin that I must have committed for all of this to have transpired, I could begin to forgive myself for whatever it was that I couldn't identify that I must be responsible for.
That is super.
I mean, I've always lived with that powerful guilt, right? Like, guilt is my gasoline since I could remember. And so that forgiveness is key, to remember to forgive ourselves. And I think a lot of us blame ourselves for things we can't even identify.
It's interesting you talk forgiveness, and Tam and I talk a lot about learning to let go. And mm-hmm. I think those two are not dissimilar in a lot of ways, you know, mm-hmm. is carrying the stuff with you from the past. The same way that you're talking about forgiveness is that we go back, well, if I would have done this differently, or if I hadn't done this, or I wouldn't be paying this price. And I think part of being able to be in the moment, or live in the moment, or have peace in the moment is, one, the forgiveness that you're referring to, huge, but also is being able to just say, the past is the past. You did what you thought was best in that moment at that time, and to carry that forward is not helpful to anyone. Being able to lay that down and be in the moment. And the same thing with picking up stuff in the future that may or may not even happen. We don't even know.
Generating anxiety for ourselves and worry, excessive worry that's not necessary, dredging up things that we may not have had any control over at all, and not realizing that we are worthy people, that we are loved, that we have self-worth, and that we're thought of highly.
If only by ourselves.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I think the problem is that we get it mixed up. The truth is, we are spiritual beings. Like, we are spiritual beings, and we're having this human experience, but I think we get it mixed up. I think sometimes we think that we're human beings having a spiritual experience.
That's so true.
And when we're human beings having a spiritual experience, then we're constantly condemning ourselves for not living to that level of perfection.
Yeah.
But we're here to have a human experience. We are here to learn. We are here, and you learn through stumbling. Think of how a child learns. A child doesn't just stand up and start walking. A child falls a million times, right? Think of little babies when they're feeding themselves. Oh my gosh, it's like all over. It's in their eyes, in their hair, it's in their ears. It's messy. Life is messy. And we have to learn, and learning means we're going to make messes. But as we learn, we get better and better and better. None of us is gifted immediately in anything. We learn and become better at it. And so, you know, when we embrace life, when we radically accept that life is messy, when we remember who we really are, when we can allow ourselves and others to fail, then we can begin to have an experience that we relish. We can begin to say, you know, I am living my best life. I am experiencing what I came here to experience. I am living in the middle of this mystery. And because it's a mystery means I don't have all the answers. You see, because when I want all the answers, it means that I am saying that this isn't a mystery, but it is a mystery. And mysteries mean we don't have all the answers, but we can enjoy the miracle of this life. and we can enjoy the miracle of the expressions that we create, and we can begin to just simply enjoy the experience that we're having here, because in the end, when we leave, that's all we have.
Wow.
You encapsulated so much. This was such an amazingly deep podcast.
Wow.
Sorry.
Wow.
I love it.
I can only say a three-letter word.
Wow. That's what you get when you get me.
People want to know more about you. And of course, we're going to have lots of links and information on our website at truenorthstory.com. Mm-hmm. I want to know what's next for you. What's coming up on your calendar?
I have a website, which is easy because it's just my name. It's TamaraMcCleary.com. And on that website, I have a lot of things, but I have a member area with a lot of free things. And particularly if people are interested and resonate at the level we were all talking, then they would love to connect with me, and I would love to connect with them, because it's delicious to be able to cultivate relationships with people who also are on that same path. And I believe that John and you, Tama, and I are on that same path. And if you come to my website, I have a pop-up when you're scrolling around my website that says click here and join as a free member. And when you join as a member, you know, I have a library of content that I'm creating, free stuff, nothing that costs any money, and videos. And if you do sign up as a member, I will send you the Hero's Journey. It's 8 steps to shifting your destination from ordinary to extraordinary. And it's a free ebook. Like I said, I don't have anything on this site on the membership piece that's for sale. And I do share a lot of what we talked about. I share a lot of writing. I share a lot of videos. And then sometimes I actually do group coaching classes. And if you are a member, you'll be alerted to those group coaching classes that I do. And I do all kinds of group coaching classes with respect to entrepreneurship and growing your business, to personal branding and how to make yourself stand out in the social media space. People who are interested in taking their speaking to the next level, maybe they've been speaking a lot for free. I do a lot of work with individuals on helping them to get their speaking to a place where they're making money for their speeches. So I do a lot of cool things just around helping people find and extract that enjoyment that they want out of their life and being as fully self-expressed as they will allow themselves to be that pioneer in their own life.
So TamaraMcCleary.com is where we'll send folks. I trust, Tamara, that you are continuing to follow that trajectory of your true north. Thank you so much for being a friend of True North Story. You are an incredible human being, and we're so grateful to know you.
Oh, I am grateful too, Tama and John. And you know, if anyone who has been listening wants to communicate with me, something has touched them, just hit the contact button on the website. It'll shoot me an email, and I personally respond to all emails. I don't want to leave anybody out if we said something that really triggered something for anyone. I am available. Just please shoot me a note. I, like you and John, want to support others, and it's been such an honor and a pleasure to spend this precious time with you, enjoying that mystery of life and the miracle of it all. And you guys are such a blessing, and you touch so many lives, and I am going to add you to my gratitude list, because I am grateful for you, Tama, and I'm grateful for you, John.
Aw, thank you.
Thank you so much, Tamara. We're absolutely
super grateful for you. Oh, for sure.
Thank you so much once again for being part of True North Story.
Oh, you're welcome. My pleasure.
Thanks, Tamara.
Blessings, guys.
Thank you for listening to True North Story, the series. Follow us on Twitter @True North Story, and tune in next time for another True North Story.